Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, this is a topic that is awesome. It's one of my favorite ones of all time. Beans and peas and grains and rice. That's stuff that
Tony likes some beans.
Just makes me happy to eat.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, well, definitely.
Well, beans.
Might as well add potatoes, even though we're not talking about that. But, you know, it's sort of that whole wonderful. I love beans, too. And especially now that so many amazing varieties are available to us that haven't been for a long time. A lot of heirloom varieties.
Yeah, in all four of those categories, there's heirloom varieties that are very cool. And I was reminded before organizing the show that it's really cheap food, beans especially.
Yeah.
You got good protein, you got nice filling starch, and you know, that's happiness on a budget, no
Been
question.
Feeding lots of people.
If you're a good bean
inexpensively.
Cook.
Inexpensively, yeah.
Yeah, no question. So what are your top five favorite beans?
Well, I have a couple of new ones. I just started buying from Charleston area Sea Island white rice peas. Oh my gosh, they are so good. They're
Sea Island
white rice peas. So obviously this is something that was grown. It's an heirloom pea. Or bean that was grown many, many hundreds of years ago.
Is it something that you cook with rice?
You can. I
Are they white?
I mean, it would make, they are, they're tiny. I mean, super tiny. You almost as small as the smallest pea you might find, English pea. And they have a little eye on them. They definitely have a nutty tone to them.
So an eye on them, sort of like a black-eyed pea?
Mm-hmm. But they're round. And they are just, and they're white, they're round, and they have an eye on them. And they are also almost mushroomy tasting. They're very earthy, and that inherent nuttiness is just kind of really amazing. And they sort of remind me of the flavor of a Crowder pea or a Field pea. They're sort of similar in flavor profile, if anyone has had that, which thank goodness now that's being grown here in Maryland, which is amazing. Those are actually, Crowder peas are my all-time favorite.
I don't think they ever stopped being grown in Maryland, Crowder peas and black-eyed peas.
Well, they just probably didn't grow as many as they used to. It's a little bit like what happened in Charleston, South Carolina. I mean, they're just, before the all this interest in turning, you know, Southern food into fine dining in the, you know, early 1990s. Prior to that, it was very hard to, I mean, I worked in Charleston, South Carolina. It was hard to find Crowder peas there. So I'm sure it was hard to find Crowder peas here. They're much more important in the cooking there than they are here. And that was a foundation ingredient in Charleston area for a long time, and was the foundation of Hoppenjohn, which is we think of as a black-eyed pea and rice dish, but it's actually a field pea and rice dish. All of those beans peas were grown in the South.
I don't know if it's totally fair to say that I know you have a certain affection for low country food, but I don't know if it's totally fair to say that Crowder peas are more important there than they are.
Are we going to argue
than
over
they are
this?
Here.
Whatever. Okay.
They're just
as important here, I'm sure. Oh Lord. Okay.
Come on now.
Oh, you come on now.
I have to defend a little bit. That's
Whatever.
Not cool.
There are Southern influences on Maryland cooking. There's no question.
We're south of the Mason-Dixon line.
And it is so fascinating that having
we're a lot more Southern in our cooking than Washington, D.C. is in its culture.
Absolutely.
So you've got four more beans to go. So that was the...
Well, Crowder peas and the Sea Island white rice peas. And I also just got purple eye stock peas, which is another very small pea.
Purple eye stock peas.
Yeah, they have an eye as well, obviously, purple eye stock. They are purple. They are almost the exact same color as the sweater you have on. Too bad everyone can't see that sweater, which is almost a wine color, like Cabernet Sauvignon color, Merlot color, something like that. Anyway, they're really good, too. They do not have as much flavor as the Sea Island white rice peas. I'd say they're a little bit more, I don't know, maybe even base flavored, but they're super, they're fun texture. All these beans that I recently got from, and they're from Anson's Mill in Charleston, our heirloom variety and are just super, super great texture-wise as well as flavor profile-wise. And with that, we also just got in Jefferson Red Rice. And I wish, you know, that Glenn was here to talk with us. We will get him on the show at some point, but Glenn Roberts is in charge of
it. Yeah, we may need a bean follow-up.
Yeah, we definitely do.
Bean and rice follow-up at the least.
But I'm pretty much assuming that this Jefferson Red Rice is, you know, that Thomas Jefferson, you know, really,
I think it was supposed
sort
to have been
amazing,
grown on
with his
estate.
Yeah, with his garden. So it's very hard to cook, very unusual. It breaks up if you handle it too much when you're cooking it. It's a little tricky, but it has an incredible flavor. Very deep, very rich, and just kind of an amazingly flavored rice. You can't believe that rice could taste this good. My other favorite rice is basmati. And that to me has this amazing perfume to it, which I would say the red rice, this Jefferson rice.
I always think
rice,
of the light texture with the basmati rice.
It's so fluffy.
When you eat it, it's
it's very fluffy.
What you often hope for and don't often get with long grain rice is, you know, not everyone is a great rice cook, and you often get this sort of clumpy business.
And we should talk about cooking basmati rice.
Well, yeah.
All right. So those beans, and I mean, I love cocoa beans too, which is a French bean that we work with. That's another small white bean that, you know, I would have said before I'd had these Sea Island white rice peas would have been my favorite. Cocoa beans are fantastic, and lentils. I love French grain lentils, really great ones produced by a good farmer. That's truly one of my favorite things as well. But I love black beans. I love everything. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I can't think of a bean.
I was going to say everything.
Cranberry
beans.
I mean, there's just tons of them. Yeah.
Everything at the top of my list is green.
Okay.
You know, fava beans. I love, especially when you can get them fresh.
I love
fresh.
Fava beans too. Absolutely one of
flageolet,
my
favorites.
Oh yeah.
Especially when
you
can get them
fresh. Yeah, you like flageolet better than I do.
I like flageolet great.
I don't know what it is
about flageolet.
I
like those really nutty beans.
Yeah, yeah.
More than the sort of smoky ones.
Flageolet, I remember at the first menu meeting when I served them, you said they're a pill-shaped bean, and that's perfect. I mean, it's a very good description. They're pale green and exactly shaped like a little pill. And just remember, just before we forget to say it, you know, soak your beans overnight before you cook them, except for lentils, pretty well. Almost every bean can be soaked overnight in
just
water.
Put that quote up on the website. Cindy says,
better
soak
your beans.
Ay, ay, ay. So,
well, I am a chef.
Oh, my God. Get the pan hot before you put the oil in. That's another one.
Oh, my gosh. I just was given, because of the beard awards, a little off topic, Tony, a Heston pan. Oh, my golly. I've always dreamed of having a Heston cooking suite. And this pan.
Always? When you were 9 years old, you were
dreaming
of having
maybe
a
not
Heston
always.
Cooking
maybe
suite.
Within the last, really, actually 3 years. But when they came to my attention. But, all right, for. Always for the last 3 years, I've been dreaming of that.
Always.
Okay, yeah, call me out, Tony. And
as though you don't call me out.
The pan they sent me, they gave me a gift, which is incredible, and it's 8.5 inch saute pan, and it has titanium in it. It is unbelievably beautiful, and it says it conducts 35% better. So you literally can't put this pan. Well, you shouldn't cook with this pan on high heat. That's how well it conducts heat. I can't wait to use this pan. I keep looking at it.
There's titanium in it?
Yeah, I don't want to use it because it's so beautiful,
well,
but
you
will.
You should save it for like if you need to crack the bow of a ship or something and split it open. Good Lord.
Oh my gosh, it's a beautiful pan.
Don't they use titanium in tennis rackets?
I don't know. Yes. And glasses. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know,
but the pan's amazing. So anyway, but back to beans. So you said
flageolet, favas.
What else?
Chickpeas.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Chickpeas.
Oh my golly.
And getting
flavor.
Getting some fresh chickpeas.
I can't wait to get fresh chickpeas.
Oh my gosh, they're
good.
Oh
my God, I agree. And I love the texture of fresh chickpeas. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. They have a particular sort of, you know, starchy personality.
The shape is fun in your mouth.
They take vinegar better than almost anything else.
Mm-hmm.
They take garlic better
and
than
tomatoes.
Almost anything else.
I like tomatoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
I love chickpeas.
Well, they can take the acid. For some reason,
I can't
seems
wait until
like,
we get fresh ones. Oh, gosh.
So, I love fish and broth. People never buy fish and broth.
I know. Well, most people don't buy broth.
So, well, they're...
That's the thing. There's. I don't know why people... Please write me a note and tell me why you're afraid of broth out there.
Yeah.
I'd like to know.
I wish people would eat broth.
Yeah, I don't understand it. If I put a broth-based soup on, it won't sell. But you put a cream-based soup on
it, you can make it
I'll
tricky
and
make it a la nage. You know. That's the way French... menu words and food
maybe.
Words work. Mm-hmm. Rockfish à la nage would be rockfish with a broth, but not too much broth, and that just means at the seaside.
Luke, do you like soup with broth? Yes, he does. Okay,
so
well,
our
He our can't producer, answer the question then.
Our producer is a big broth fan, clearly by his expression. So besides keeping the program under control and pretty much the only reason that this can be quality, he's a big broth fan.
Is thanks to Luke. Exactly. Thank you, Luke.
So
next, come on.
You know, I have to cross over with you on the Crowder peas. And then Dixie butter beans.
Oh.
A little tiny, looks like
Yum.
Lima beans.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like lima beans, but they're just kind of sweeter and not as starchy.
And little.
I love lima beans, but I don't love them as much as I love
the little ones
the
are
little,
really special.
The little Dixie butter beans.
And they're hard to find, aren't they? I mean,
yeah.
We don't get a lot of those. And
no.
It's like finding black raspberries.
And
I feel like I've found the holy grail when we get 2 pints of black raspberries in.
The other thing that you see sometimes, you'll see speckled butter beans. They're big. They're the size of lima beans. They have nothing. They have no distinguishing characteristics.
Hmm. Okay.
You know, they're sort of why they're called butter beans, I don't know.
Well, and the thing is we get these around the same time we get corn, don't we?
Typically.
Yeah. So the combination of the two, the little butter beans and
succotash
corn,
is an honest thing
heavens.
in this
right.
part of the country.
Right. So good. Mm.
We're not there yet, but it's always something to look
forward
to.
And that would be nice with a braised piece of pork. You know, a nice, tender piece of braised pork shoulder with, you know, just this great sauté of butter beans and fresh, roasted corn.
Oh. When time comes to make succotash, it's good with about any darn thing you want to put it with. It's always in my brain with fried chicken.
Well, that's a good idea, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
Oh, my God.
You know, the bean place we've not gone, and this is the first thing that comes up every year is peas, English peas,
mm-hmm.
little green peas that terrify kids when they're overcooked and put with carrots.
Gosh, but can be so, so good.
They can be, but, and they're honestly the highlight of risotto milanese.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you get really good fresh peas, not giant fresh peas, but relatively small guys that are sweet, and you make risotto milanese, which is with saffron and peas, it's really not that.
Which actually... I'm making right now.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about it being risotto milanese.
It's funny,
but
thing.
That is on my menu right now. Yeah,
yeah,
saffron risotto with
risotto milanese.
Reggiano and English peas.
And a lot of butter.
And a lot of butter. Did you? Yeah.
And a lot of love.
You bet.
A
I
lot
love,
of work.
Oh my God. Yeah. I love making risotto. It is truly one of my favorite things to do in the kitchen besides making soups and sauces. I just, and confiting and braising and.
Now, the kind of rice used for risotto is a little bit different. We'll get into rice a little more in the next segment, but.
Mm-hmm.
Rice for risotto is very different from something like Carolina gold rice, which is heirloom, or basmati rice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you want to attempt risotto with that. You can make risotto with other things, like a grain called farro. You can make risotto actually with pasta.
Yes.
A kind of risotto with macaroni in particular does well. Anything kind of thickish, strozzopreti, works for it. But peas, English peas. So... How about a recipe or an idea for English peas?
Short of the risotto, I mean, the first thing I do is make English pea soup and saute shallots and onion and butter, which is a pretty typical start for a soup, and do not allow that to color at all because the whole goal of this soup is to just cook those peas until they're al dente and puree it immediately and ice it down immediately if you're not eating it.
Well, you're not after
right
strong
away.
Flavor from the shallot and
no,
onion.
No, just a little bit of shallot and onion sautéed in butter once it's translucent. If you want chicken stock, add a little bit of light chicken stock. I suggest the chicken stock because the peas will cook very quickly in chicken stock or water if you want salted water. Bring that up to a boil. Let it cook for about 15 minutes, just the water or stock and the onions and the shallots and the butter and salt. And that allows the stock to become flavored with the onion and the shallot. And then you can drop in your cleaned, shucked peas. And literally it takes, because you should be in a big pot, should be a nice amount of water. It should recover very quickly. So you really only need to cook them about 4 minutes. And just keep testing them. Just, you know, you don't want them to be starchy. You don't want them to be undercooked. Undercooked is honestly as bad as overcooking them because your soup will taste starchy and sort of raw. It's not going to be pretty. So you want them to be just right, which is just still firm. And then take it off, puree it immediately. And again, hopefully a really good blender because you really need to break up those peas in that
you
blender.
You got to be careful about
putting hot liquid blending, in a blender.
Blending it, blending hot liquid.
Yep. Absolutely. Don't overfill your blender. I suggest about 50% of the volume of the blender filled. And then pass that through a tammy, and then I finish with a little bit of heavy cream, and that, and just check for salt and pepper. I've recently started at a pinch of cayenne. I do add a good amount of black pepper, to, not crazy, but you know enough that you can actually know it might be there. And a pinch of cayenne is nice, and it really doesn't, it doesn't need anything else. And you can either choose to add the cream or not add the cream, but it's obviously more elegant and more beautiful on the palate if you do add the cream. The other thing is that we make pea shoot soup. Oh my gosh! And honest, you get tons.
What a so much perfume
of flavor from the pea shoots. Yes, it's really gorgeous, and that
it's not
I
as,
don't
it's not
add
as starchy,
cream to.
Obviously,
yeah, and I don't add, so I don't add cream to that. We just, when I make that, same thing: onion, shallot, and butter. Saute it, add the water, salted water, or chicken stock. Bring it up to a boil, and I actually add the pea shoots right before I'm blending it. I don't cook the pea shoots on the stove. So again, let your soup base work for 15 to 20 minutes. Take it off, put it on your, well, I have a stainless steel table in my kitchen, so put it wherever it's safe for you to put it, on a hot pad or something, and not directly on your countertop, obviously. And begin to, and then put all the pea shoots in there and wash those things really, really well before you work with them. Put all the pea shoots in there and put a lot in and begin to puree it and strain it. And that is a gorgeous soup. Really emerald green, deep, rich color, fantastic flavor. So it's fun to work with both parts of the plant.
You know what's a difficult thing to match is the risotto milanese with wine. Now, when I think about the risotto milanese, I want a glass of wine because it's rich.
Yes,
and you want, and you
sure,
want, and
yeah,
you want to cut through it.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, how do you do it without dominating the saffron? How do you do it showing off the sweetness of the peas? And it's definitely at that divide of white wine and red wine.
Okay, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's kind of a, if you want to drink white wine, at least in my experience, a really good Gavi de Gavi is a good match. The grape, the Cortese, has a nice little, you know, edge. There's some width to the acidity,
okay,
that you need, and shows off the fruit and the wine and the sweetness of the peas, and doesn't compete with the perfume. In a red, a Chianti Classico, but sort of, this is going to sound weird, but from a higher altitude, village like Castellina in Chianti or Lamale or Panzano are at higher altitude, which means more aromatic, not quite as tannic.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you find, if you're going from a great vintage, 12, 13, very, very strong years, they'll be in the market right now.
Great.
And Chianti Classico is what you want. If you can, you know, Chianti Geografico, and all the other guys, they're all less money for sure, and would work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice to have Chianti Classico. The giant upgrade in wine is not a big expense. Anyway, we can come back on Formula Wolf on food and wine. We've got rice and grains,
yes,
to deal with.
And eventually a chef's challenge. Day.
Yes. Yeah, you got a special one coming.
Oh, yeah. Okay, you do too.
All of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, you know, we didn't do justice to the chickpea, the garbanzo, uh-huh, the chechi.
The chechi. I like calling them chechi.
And you see it, I mean, that's a real globetrotter. You see it in Indian food. Mm-hmm. You see it in all kinds of stuff.
Italian.
So just in case you know it as something else, we're talking about the same thing when we say chickpea. Which is actually kind of cute.
Well, and also, yeah, also we can point out that with Anson's Mill, and I know the owner actually used to be the GM of the restaurant where I did my apprenticeship in Charleston. And so I've known him since 1984, which is an incredible relationship to have. And he's just a brilliant man and really has been responsible for preserving the pathways of Southern cooking. and bringing, particularly preserving all these and bringing back all these heirloom, you know, things like corn and peas and beans and rice.
But you can take a look at an Anson's Mill website and
it's not just wholesale. You can buy retail.
And I think just order stuff. And you can get Carolina gold rice.
Right. Or if you want really great grits, obviously I buy his grits.
And you can get some. Yeah.
And polenta. Oh, my gosh. The polenta.
Yeah, polenta is great.
And he has different types of cornmeal. I mean, they just, oh, my gosh, it's endless. I mean, you could just buy, you know, a pound or two of thing. I think you can.
Yeah, if you actually have those grits, they're so much better than.
Oh, they're so delicious. Well, I've been working with them for a long time.
You want to have that and not the one with the pilgrim on the label.
we'll put it on the...
I think it's probably a pretty easy lookup.
We'll put it on the website, yeah.
Okay, that'd be great. So if that wraps
on,
beans and peas...
we touched
on
rice.
And pea shoots are one of those things that... I remember bringing those to you.
I'm like, well,
telling you that we need to use these. We need to put this in salads. We need to... And I think that I brought them to a couple of other of our places and I had people starting to play with them a little bit, and then you made that soup. That was just amazing.
The color, it's just so gorgeous. I mean, the color couldn't be a more beautiful color.
When I first got those from farmers, pure. They're like, you want these?
Yeah, we're like, yes.
They brought me big old black trash bags of
Fun thing is the blossom is really pretty. We would use those as garnish on the plate.
Yeah.
And some of them would have little tiny pea pods on them, too, even. So, really... a special thing.
Yeah, that's definitely everything but the husk you can use on that plant.
That's amazing. Yeah, I need to grow some.
Yeah. So. Well, aren't they going out at the farm?
Not yet.
Oh.
Not yet. Maybe. So,
let's talk about grains and rice. I want to do the same thing. I want to ask you top five for you, grains and rice.
Well, for rice for me, I love basmati rice, and it is really predominantly because my brother-in-law is from Iran, and if my sister had not learned how to cook Persian food from her mother-in-law, I probably wouldn't have really become familiar with that cooking, or especially, and not so much basmati rice. There is a dish that Persian people make that's called tarig, and it is, one of the best rice dishes ever.
Is that the business with the potatoes in the bottom of the pan?
I'm not sure. I forget what that's called, and I'm sorry, I can't remember what that's called, but no, this is the one where you you cook the rice hard on the bottom of the pot, so it becomes very crispy. And so the process is of making that is you boil the rice. So just so you know, in order to make basmati rice, you boil it in large amount of water, salted water, or water with salt and saffron, whatever you want to do to it, but just to do straight, regular rice. But first you have to soak it, and you have to wash it before you soak it. So I often wash mine at least 7 times. So you put it in a bowl.
So step one is to wash it.
Yeah, so you put
the
rice.
What do you have to do to wash it?
Put the rice in a bowl. Have probably a couple of inches of cold water above the level of the rice that you're cooking. And just keep running your hand through it. And what you're doing is getting rid of some of that extra starch. And just it's actually fun to do. I love that whole thing of just running your hand through the rice in the cold water. Rinse it off. Drain it off and then do it again. So you just keep getting fresh cold water onto the rice.
Meditation
and draining
for a
it.
Cook.
It is, for sure. I mean, it's just one of those things that feels really good on your hand, quite frankly.
Do you say
No, okay. not normally. And so once you've rinsed it like 7 times in cold water, then you soak it, drain it, and soak it in fresh water, and then get your pot going. Yeah, we often soak ours overnight when we're making. We serve a lot of basmati rice at the restaurant, so soak it overnight in the walk-in after you've washed it, and then bring your pot up to a boil. And if you're making tarig, it's just salt, and you want the rice to just be powering through that large amount of water on boil, and it's usually I'd say 4 to 5, maybe even 6 minutes of boiling. Then you drain it, and then to make the tarig, you get another big pot on, put a decent amount of oil, and I think my sister uses corn oil, it might be canola, and puts that in the bottom of the pan in a
but oil that can take high heat.
Yeah, probably about, and not a flavored oil. Absolutely, try to get something as neutral as possible.
Not nut oil, not peanut oil.
I would not use peanut oil, and probably about, I'd say about 1/2 inch of oil in the bottom of the pan. And then you start to mount the rice in there and you actually shape it like a pyramid, and you just spoon the rice in. That oil should be getting hot, and you start spooning the rice in, and you literally make this pyramid out of the rice. Then she takes a wooden spoon and pokes 6 holes from the top to bottom. Am I describing that?
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. So let me recap. You have oil going in high heat.
Mm-hmm.
You build a pyramid out of rice.
Mm-hmm.
And then you decide to smash it like a toddler.
No, you're not smashing it.
Like a no, okay.
No, you're creating holes.
You're poking holes.
You're creating holes so the steam
for steam
can escape.
Okay.
Yes. And then you wrap a kitchen towel around your lid, and because you need that towel to absorb that steam. You need that rice to dry out in there. And my sister actually wraps that towel, that kitchen towel, around with a clothespin, captures it on the top of the lid. And then obviously now you're on low heat. And I forget. I want to say it takes like 20 minutes.
You close the top, but with a cloth on the top to absorb
on this lid.
Moisture.
Yeah. Yeah. You literally wrap the entire. And it's also just, I mean, you're absolutely sealing this pot with this. It's kind of a double thing. And it takes like 20 minutes on low heat for the tahdig to be created. And,
so when you do that, when you go to put the top on, you go to very low heat.
Yes, very low heat. Oh my gosh, it's just, you know, it only creates this little bit of crispy rice on the bottom of the pot, but it's prized. I mean, it's a very important part of Persian cooking, and it's so delicious. And you just sit there and, you know, eat this wonderful, the rest of the rice is just soft rice, beautiful rice, but the tahdig is always on top. It's so crunchy and good. But
pardon me,
mm-hmm.
for the legal department at WYPR, I have to throw in that it is not a responsibility if you burn your pot doing this.
I would suggest buying a Persian cookbook and reading about it, quite frankly, or looking at it online, or even watching a video online. I mean, anything that you're doing like this that is really unusual, if you're not Persian, if this is not typical to your cooking, this is a little tricky. I might watch a video.
The reason I said the disclaimer is because...
All right.
I can see someone, you know, with a light duty aluminum.
Oh no, it's got to be heavy duty. Well, and actually, my sister uses a Teflon coated pan, and I'm not big on that, but I think in this purpose, it's actually really perfect.
Yeah, or Calphalon might be.
Yeah, Calphalon or Teflon coated. But just getting back to basmati, and we make saffron basmati as well, so. We just put a load of saffron, which costs money, but we put a lot of saffron in our boiling water and salt, and we typically make saffron basmati rice.
How different to make, you know, normal long grain like Uncle Ben's rice?
It's so
like that.
Easy to make that rice, and I mean, we use that. I cook that. I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with regular Uncle Ben's rice. I remember I had a cook one time that walked in and was like, I'm like, are you kidding me? What exactly is wrong with Uncle Ben's rice? Nothing, just because it's not super exotic. So it's a simple process, again, of I like butter with rice. I mean, you can use whatever you want, but I like a lot of butter in my rice, quite frankly. So saute onions in butter, and I would take them to the point of almost beginning to caramelize, but, you know, just make sure they're cooked well.
So before
and I would do
cover.
A small dice. You don't want gigantic pieces of onion in your rice. You want it to sort of be a small dice so it's not so much bigger than the size of the rice. What were you saying?
I was just saying, so you cook the onion until they almost color, but not color.
Right, and then we add the rice and coat the rice with onion and the butter. It just only takes a second. And then add your liquid. And this is what my chef taught me, Marcelo Vasquez.
So that's the only time that you stir the rice?
Correct.
Right.
Well, wait a minute. So what Marcelo always said was 2 fingers above the level of the rice is the perfect amount of liquid. And that is the way I've always made my rice. I have never changed that. So just remember that if you want tomato paste in there, or if you want, you know, anytime you're cooking a starch, you want that starch to absorb all the flavor. So all that flavor really needs to be in there from the beginning. And with rice, it's more important in risotto than it is in this process, but just keep that in mind. But you don't want to season something like a starch afterwards. You want to season it from the beginning properly. So, you know, if you need salt, make sure it's the right amount of salt. But anyway, bring it up to a boil. I do stir it one more time once it comes up to a boil, just to make sure everything's mixed up well. And I taste that liquid to make sure it is seasoned the way I want it to. If I'm making Tabasco-scented rice, or if I'm making, red rice, which is a traditional Charleston dish, which has tomato paste and Tabasco and a little bit of bacon and onion and shallot in it, I make sure it has as much spice as I need it to. And then, once I've stirred it that one time, put the lid on, and turn it down to the lowest heat. And I usually only leave it on that for maybe 3 or 4 minutes. And then I just put the whole pan on the back of the stove, which, of course, in our kitchen is going to be hot. We always have our ovens running. So recognize that when I say that.
But the heat is off.
The heat is off. But recognize there is residual heat coming from my ovens.
Well, and the pan is heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And the pot is heavy.
Yes.
So there's going to be, carryover heat.
Right.
In that
pot.
Oh,
for sure. For sure. And the other thing is, I've never timed it. Gosh, how long does it take for it to finish? I want to say maybe 12 minutes.
Don't get nervous and start stirring it.
Definitely don't stir it.
I think lumpy rice comes from this.
Yeah, that never occurred to me that somebody would do that.
People think, I am cooking. I have a spoon. I should stir things. And this is one where if you do that, if you can't control yourself from doing that.
Control yourself.
You get lumpy rice.
No, once you put the lid on it, leave it alone. Don't touch it until you your 12-minute mark or whatever, and then just check it. Don't stir it. Just look at it and taste it. And if it's cooked. Now, of course, we undercook ours because we have to heat it back up again, obviously.
But then do you add more butter?
Oh, yeah. No, well, and no. I forgot the part. I forgot the part
it's
where...
It's so easy to get you this stuff.
I forgot the part where I add a little bit of extra butter at the end before I put
just
the lid on.
Just a teensy?
Uh-huh. Yes.
So you butter it 3 times.
I butter it on pickup as well.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like I said,
there
3 times.
Go. All right. That's right.
Oh, my
Rule
gosh.
Of three.
All right. Well, we should spend some time on some other grains.
Sure.
Besides rice.
Let's talk about farro because, oh, my gosh.
Well...
You
yeah,
love it. You should talk about that. It's such a good. I love it now.
I mean, there are two ways to deal with it. One is farro is an ancient relative of wheat. You see it in Italian cooking a lot. It is slightly ridiculous to say it correctly in Italian. Farro.
I think it's fun to say that.
Okay, say it.
Farro.
There you go.
See.
So, you can find this stuff. I like it best cooked in vegetable stock or mushroom
mm-hmm,
stock.
Mm-hmm.
Or it is people always wonder, what do I do with these dried mushrooms? If you have vegetable stock and you add mushrooms to it, it will scent. The farro will take, it has a natural nuttiness.
Yes.
It will take that mushroom flavor like crazy. A little bit of dried porcini in there.
I'm going with
and,
that.
And you cook it, and that's one you can stir. It's okay. It requires salt. That's just don't forget that. If you think it's dull, it's probably because you didn't salt it correctly. There's not that much, that you have to do to it.
How much liquid to farro? And is this a loose? I've never made it. I've eaten it, but I've never made it myself because I work with so many other grains. But.
Frankly, I add less liquid than I do for rice.
Okay.
And I kind of treat it a little bit like I do short grain rice, like la bomba rice or like making risotto. So you add liquid as you go.
Okay.
For me, I like the results the best. If you add and stir, you can make risotto with it.
Okay.
And the risotto is a little more sort of country, but I like it.
It's not as starchy.
And it's fun to put like
creamy.
Yeah, farro with like seafood, like Calabrian style, and chilies can be really good.
Mm-hmm.
Verde with lots and lots of herbs can be very good. I always get some onion and garlic in that pan in advance. It will take stronger flavors than more delicate rice will.
So this is not the sort of situation where you put all the liquid in, bring it up to a boil, and put a lid on.
You add some as you go.
Okay.
I don't add as slowly as you do with risotto.
I'm definitely going to make some. We have a new chef going on, and he did a pretty cool tasting the other day with it, and I just totally fell in love with it. I don't know why. I guess I've always left it to the Italian restaurant to do. That's why I haven't really touched it.
It's one of those things that you have to keep tasting it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take more than 10, 12 minutes to cook. But really, I don't know how to tell someone, put it on at this temperature and it's going to go this long.
But it's probably on low heat,
A lot depends on the pan. Mm-hmm. A lot depends on if you didn't overload the pan or the pot, I should say. It's relatively low heat. If you have it in like a heavy copper pot or something, I mean, I'll cook it, and if the whole process is going to take me 15 minutes tops, and it'll keep carrying over, and I keep it at pretty low heat the entire time, and I use a pretty good amount of garlic. It really absorbs that.
Okay.
In a good way.
Good.
So,
good.
But that's a fun one. When we come back on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine, we have to talk about the grain everyone mispronounces, quinoa, which is really hot right now. Ooh. And then we get into a chef's challenge.
All right. Sounds good.
All of that and more on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And the thing we should do, that's, you know, I'm curious about, because you never stop learning about beans and rice
right.
and grain.
You never stop learning about food, period.
No. I would love to see recipes from listeners of what they
fun.
Do, maybe from another culture, maybe from our culture, maybe something we completely screwed up. So please email us at our address here, foremanwolf@wypr.org, and send us all those ideas.
Yeah, that would be fun to
traditional
hear.
Traditional recipes, corrections.
Exactly.
and we love to see them. And if we see stuff that's really sharp, we're going to have a great time reading it on the air. And anyway, so we have to get into quinoa.
Okay.
And I think one of my favorite television commercials, and this is played on a lot of sporting things, is the one where the guy brings out for the vegetarian at the tailgate. He's got a bunch of burgers, and then he brings out a quinoa patty that vegetarians will eat. That's very nutritious, and calls it, and looks at it, holds it up, and calls it quino. And a very confused look on his face. And anyway, I was like, you know, there is a large segment of the population that still thinks it's quinoa and is afraid of it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Quinoa, you can cook very much like I described cooking farro. Mm-hmm. And it's just a little more delicate than that. At the end of cooking quinoa, you can fold all kinds of goodies into there.
That's nice.
That's something that's great. And for the world that loves avocados right now, a lot of fresh chopped cilantro and avocado with pretty garlicky quinoa.
Oh, yeah.
Is pretty
that's
great.
That's going to be all right.
That's pretty great. Mm-hmm. And super nutritious, because that is also, you've got good protein in that, just like in a lot of beans and like you find in some rice.
You know, backtracking to lentils, one of the cool things about lentils is you don't have to soak them. I do wash them. I wash all beans before I work with them. But gosh, they cook very quickly.
They do cook quickly, yeah. Which is why there's always lumpy rice and overcooked lentils, those are the devil.
Yeah. Well, especially with the French green lentils, I like them to be a little bit undercooked. Not a lot, but you want them to still be almost firm. And oh my goodness, you know, toss that with some, you know, fresh garlic and
I'll take lentils sort of more country than less, you know, like lentils with a pig's foot or pickled pig's foot. Mm-hmm. Is a great thing.
Mm-hmm. I just love them. Little garlic, a little extra virgin olive oil, aged sherry vinegar, salt and pepper. Simple, great with duck. You know, braised duck, confit duck, grilled duck breast, grilled chicken breast, grilled anything.
Pan-fried
pretty
chicken
much.
Livers.
Yeah. I mean, just the world. Lentils go with a lot of things. So, but they cook quickly. So that's nice. I mean, you could easily, conceivably, cook lentils for dinner. Sort of a, you know, I mean, they're going to be done in 12, 14 minutes.
Mm-hmm. That's also one that you have to season, or it's going to be dull as can be.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Beans and other grains, rice not, I don't find that it wants as much rice. Rice, I don't find that it wants as much salt as some other grains. But farro, quinoa, you need salt. Mm-hmm. The beans and peas always need salt, and people tend to be too light on those, and they end up being a little more dull than they should be.
Okay.
Chef's challenge.
You're going first.
I'm not going first. I'm handing this to you first.
Okay. So crowder peas, fresh Italian parsley, Roma tomatoes.
You have good ingredients in this one. So.
I already like them. Extra virgin olive oil, butter, zucchini, perch from the bay, little neck clams, bacon your choice, hanger steak, onion, origin of your choice. Is this garlic, Tony?
It is garlic.
Onion Sandy. Yellow, jasmine rice. Oh, jasmine. Vegetable stock, chicken feet. Wow, this is a lot of ingredients. What does that say?
Spice rack.
Spice cabinet.
Yeah.
Red wine, vinegar, 2 bottles, 2015 Cru Beaujolais.
Ooh. Oh, my God, because they're so good.
Let's start.
They're so good, the 2015 Beaujolais, the Cru, okay. The ones named after the different villages, like Moulin, Vin, Fleury, Chirouble.
All right. So I have pig's feet. I have chicken feet.
Chicken feet,
vegetable stock, jasmine rice. I'm going to make the jasmine rice with the vegetable stock. So I have onion. I'll saute the... you know what? I'm not going to add anything to the jasmine rice. It'll just be bring up the vegetable stock and add the rice. I'm not even going to sweat it and season it with a little bit of salt. So jasmine rice is being made. And with the chicken feet...
I was totally confident you were gonna fortify that stock with the chicken feet.
Nope. Chicken feet. I'm going to cook my crowder peas and with the chicken feet.
There
so
you go.
I'll make a stock with the chicken feet. And then once it's done and strained, and I'm going to put in a little piece of this bacon that's my choice, which would be a hickory smoked bacon, lightly smoked. So chicken feet stock made with the bacon, a little bit of bacon, just to perfume it and give it a little bit of richness. And then crowder peas cook very, very quickly. So I'll bring that stock up to a boil, add the crowder peas and cook those. And then what I'm going to do is once they're cooled down, I'll let them cool down in their stock. I'll drain them. I'll reserve that stock for something I'm about to do later. I will chop the Roma tomatoes, toss them with extra virgin olive oil, a little bit of the Italian parsley, salt and pepper, and a little bit of fresh lime juice, which isn't on here, but I'm sure I have. And
just in your left pocket.
And so I'm making a crowder pea salad. The zucchini I'm going to...
You and your lime juice.
I love lime juice. Zucchini, I'm going to wash really well.
I love margaritas.
Rub it and then dice it into a small dice. And I'm going to add it raw to the crowder pea salad. So I've got that going. Little neck clams, I'm going to steam open. And a little bit of your wine.
What?
Yeah, I knew that was coming. So I'm going to steam open the clams in the red wine, a little bit of water, and bay leaves since I have this spice cabinet to work from.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, by the way, you have red wine vinegar at the bottom. I would add that up to the crowder peas instead of that lime you're making fun of me about.
Yeah, it's all there. It's
all right,
there.
Yeah. And so little neck clams get steamed open in the red wine. And obviously, since I'm using a little bit of this great red wine, I'm going to make a sauce from this. I'm going to dice a little bit of the bacon. And
it's all for drinking, I promise.
The perch from the bay, I'm going to make a beignet batter or what's really not a traditional beignet batter. It's more almost like a tempura batter, but baking powder, baking soda, sparkling water, cake flour, salt, and the zests from limes and then I'll fry the perch.
That left pocket lime.
And those little neck clams that I just opened up, those are going to garnish that fried perch, and I'm going to leave them right in the shell, and I'm going to strain the liquid that I cooked the clams in. I'm going to strain it, and then I'm going to reduce it down a little bit, and you gave me butter, so I'm going to mount butter into that. And I'm going to serve rice, the jasmine rice, on the plate with the perch and the clams and the sauce. And now I have hanger steak, which is going to garnish. The hanger steak is going to be the garnish for the crowder pea salad. And that's perfect together. Hanger steak will be great.
Hanger steak has good flavor. It doesn't necessarily have really easy texture, but
really
good flavor.
Right. So I'll just roast it. What I'll do is I'll sear it in a hot pan, season it well, and slow roast it in the oven. I was thinking about putting it on the grill, but I'm just going to go right into the oven with it. It's easier.
It's a pain, but it's a good grill rare kind of item.
Right. So you could either grill it or roast it and then slice it thin and put it out over that salad. And that's everything.
Okay.
And drink the
that sounds nice.
Rest of the wine.
Sounds okay. Nice. And you have about a half bottle of wine left. Oh, my God. So, let's see.
Tony's isn't as good.
Well, I don't have my reading glasses either.
Oh, boy.
This word is either faro or food.
It's faro.
Great.
10.
17 whole blue crabs.
That's 10.
Told you to have my glasses.
10 whole crabs.
Chickpeas, yes. Bacon, yeah. Huh. Onion, shallot, garlic, eggs.
Apparently you can read it.
Well, it sort of looks like Ellis, but I think it's eggs. Chicken stock, butter, extra virgin olive oil, rosemary, thyme, basil, English peas.
It's a mishmash.
Yeah, it is a little mishmashy. I mean, my goodness. Blue crabs, you can make awesome stock from blue crabs, and you can pick the meat. So that's kind of an easy, you want to make that other stock. Because you've got fodder to cook, you've got chickpeas to cook, and you've got peas to cook. So you get a starchy meal. That's what you have. The chickpeas I want to cook with the crab stock. So you need stuff to make the crab stock. And if it's not Old Bay, I can not only not read, I can't think. If it's not Old Bay, then, you can make your own sort of version of it with a little turmeric and mustard seed and a little bit of cumin and then a little bit of pepper. But and the pepper I like to use is actually a dried Korean spice. But that little quartet will give you a nice little bit more delicate spice mixture. It doesn't have all the chili powder that Old Bay does. But that you'll need that to see. I would season the crabs and steam those crabs, crack them open, get nice stock. You want to pick enough to be a garnish. But then you can make a beautiful salad with the chickpeas, with the crabs, with some sweet onion. Maybe a little fresh basil. That makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. The farro, the bacon. I really haven't cooked farro with bacon, and I like that idea. With the chicken stock, let that be a heavier flavor. And maybe with rosemary to finish that, and a little bit of the garlic that I think that farro likes a lot of. And then that leaves me English peas, which I would really slowly cook shallots or roast them in the oven. I do love shallots with English peas. Literally, you just need butter, those sweet shallots that have roasted a really long time. And you could leave them whole if you wanted to. You could chop them fine, but I think I'd leave them whole and roast them until they're slow and sweet. Until they're sweet.
Yeah.
They'll look cute in there. And then the peas don't need much time at all. If the fresh ones, a little bit of time. You could blanch them in water and salt, and then in the pan with butter and... Look at me using butter again. I think that's everything that you gave me. Eggs. I didn't use the eggs. I'll eat the eggs tomorrow.
Okay. Very good.
You got to have breakfast.
Yes.
Most important meal of the day.
Thank you,
Tony.
You
could have fodder for breakfast.
All right.
Anyway, I think that's all we have time for on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Again, please email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. If you want to reach us, and you can download any of the podcasts of previous programs at the same site, just look up the Foreman & Wolf page, and you can reach Chef Cindy Wolf through social media, follow her there.
On Instagram as Chef Wolf, and on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf.
And my Instagram, that's very periodic, is The Real Tony Foreman. Thanks so much for listening.
Happy Sunday.